so the some of this reporting is going to seem better.
Dang. So who doesn't like cheap, right? We all are fans of cheap. Well, here we have SDR, software-defined radio on the cheap. And what better cheapskate to tell us about that than Dan Srebnick?
Thank you. of course, one of the qualifications of the cheap part is the cheap doesn't necessarily include the computer. But so part of the assumption is everybody's got some kind of computer lying around they can use with this. But so SDR is really started to come to my attention a number of years ago here at a SWL Fest when I first encountered the Perseus SDR over at the other place in the listening room we had. And I was pretty impressed with it and went out and got myself one. But that certainly wasn't cheap. It was, still is. Shortwave covers up to 30 megahertz, although there is a VHF adapter for it as well, and originally was going for about $1,300, now I think is down to $900. Not cheap, but so over the years, there have been more and more types of SDR devices coming out, but the real breakthrough was a few years ago when some folks found out they could use these, at the time, little $10 dongles that were designed for European television reception and turn them into VHF and above software-defined receivers. So one warning, even though the conference has SWL in the name, I'm really focusing here on at least 25 megahertz and above, because that's the lower range of what we'll be talking about today. So, software-defined receiver, I break it up into three different components. There's hardware, there's software, and the software now does a lot of the work that was formerly done in hardware or by custom digital signal processing chips in the early days. But to me, the most important component really is imagination, because there's very little you can't do. In fact, the things I found you can't do really revolve around patents and the availability of code, as we'll see. But so you need an antenna, and you know, sometimes here's the first SDR I bought. See that little antenna? I mean, it's nothing more than a little piece of coated wire. Of course, for shorter wavelengths, above 25 megahertz, the shorter you go, the better that's going to work. But you need a way to pull something out of the air. There's no way anyone's found yet to do that in software. You need filtering. And as we're talking about a cheap device, I can't overstate the importance of filtering, which you're really not going to find in the cheap devices. And that leads to some interesting compromises, where you can receive a lot with the inexpensive devices. If you live in an RF-saturated area, you're maybe going to shortly wish you have a better device. The devices I'm going to be talking about today are very short or really non-existent in terms of hardware pre-selection. Amplification, you do need a way to pick a signal out of the air and to amplify it. That's got to be done in hardware. You need an analog to digital converter. This one's a little strange. It's not always what you think, because the analog to digital works like this. If you're pulling a signal out of the air, even if it's a digital signal, you're actually pulling it out in analog mode and later converting it into digital for further processing. And that it's kind of a strange thing to wrap your mind around, but whatever is received is really received in analog, because even what's being transmitted in digital is today, I mean, nobody's transmitting broadcasts using pulses, right? It's just breaking up the band into different sounds. And of course, the general purpose computer. By the way, this is this is Windows today. Doesn't have to be Windows. Could be Linux, could be Mac. I'm actually mostly, in the rest of my life, a Linux user, but for radio stuff, I've just found that Windows provides more of what I need. A sound card, very important, because this is all about getting at the sound. Well, not all about. Sometimes, actually, we're looking to get at data, which is sound being converted to text or other interesting things. So you need an operating system to run on that computer. This is where the SDR really shines, is the software ability to do digital signal processing. You know, years ago, you had things like a demodulator stage, you had maybe a BFO or a product detector for single sideband. All of that and more that used to require hardware can now be done in software. You also need the ability to do protocol decoding, whether it's as simple as being able to demodulate, you know, AM or FM or single sideband, or something maybe more complex like a digital protocol, like say for those familiar with what Kim Elliott's been doing with VOA Radiogram, MFSK32 is very popular. Other digital protocols, slow scan TV is an example. And you need a user interface because, you know, the important thing is for you as a listener to be able to interact with what you're doing. But imagination is really the most important thing. If you think it's possible, think it through, look around for the different types of components, because it may be that one program you have does a piece and another program you have does a piece, and it may not all be doable today by one piece of software, but whatever you want to do may be possible because the output of one program can be the input of another. And that'll be a theme we'll revisit a few times. So also, if you want to do something with a chunk of spectrum for a number of people in the room, I see, you know, a number of you are recording big chunks of shortwave spectrum for either archival or for later review, and you can do that, or you can record just the one audio signal you want to hear too. It depends on what you want to do. It depends on how much disk space you have available. So now let's talk specifically about the RTL SDR. And it's based on a chipset from Realtek, and it was originally designed for DVB-T and for FM radio reception. It has an analog digital converter. It has a standard USB interface. And originally, if you start doing some reading on the net, you'll see reference to an Elonix chip. You can't get the Elonix chip anymore. The Elonix chip was the first chip. It had a range from about 50 megahertz to 2 gigahertz, but Elonix was acquired and stopped making the chips. So manufacturers then switched over to a chip from Raphael Micro, the A20T. So when we talk about the RTL2832 or RTL SDR, what we're really talking about is an SDR that has the Realtek RTL2832U interface and a Raphael RA20T chip, or now there's a T2 chip as well. So if you're shopping, and you could find these on Amazon, on eBay, at Hamfests, as long as the device you're buying meets those two requirements, you're not going to have any issues with generally available software. I know one guy near me. He was just banging his head against the wall, couldn't get it to work. It turned out that one of those two chips was somehow slightly different, and it was just never going to work. The new device that I have, so this is the original device. I got at the Hamfest years ago, and this was about, it's maybe $10 or $12, I don't remember exactly. In here, with a bunch of antennas, is the newer device, and this was, I'll put a picture up there so you can see it better. You could come up and look, but this was $27, came with three antennas, a little mag mount, and a better metal case as opposed to the rubberized plastic case on the original. There are also hardware mods, up converters, down converters. You can extend the range. Folks are using derivatives of these on the shortwave bands, but we're not going to look at that today. I know that there are going to be a couple more presentations over the course of the weekend focusing on SDR and the future, so maybe one of those will focus on that. So the one I just bought was from a company called New Elec, and they've put a lot of effort into improving the design. $27. The thing I didn't mention is the new devices with the T2 chip. There's a version with a TCXO, a thermally compensated crystal oscillator, much more accurate. You don't really have to mess around with tuning offsets like you did in the original model. They're much more stable. The new device gets hot, though. I've got to say, with the aluminum case, when it's plugged in and I've got SDR sharp loaded and I'm listening for a while, and it kind of depends on, I think, what I'm doing with it, it gets mighty hot. But, you know, so the metal will dissipate the heat. So here's a better shot, especially for the folks in the back of the room. The one on the left there is the original model, and that one used to be off a bit in frequency. I had to, a lot of the programs have a software offset where you can specify an offset in parts per million. That was off by about 19 parts per million. The new one from New Elec is dead on and highly accurate. There's a wide variety of antenna connectors. So the original one had an MCX connector. And, you know, okay, what's an MCX connector? I think the only other devices that I've seen use them are some of the original Sirius satellite radios. Mm. They had an MCX connector for the satellite antenna. I think. I've never actually tried to put one in the other, but they look pretty much like that. So, you know, that could be a bear to find an adapter, although you can find them. You could find anything on eBay or Amazon or, you know, even at a decent, well-stocked ham fest. But now you can get things that actually make sense to folks in our hobby, like SMA connectors or BNC connectors, connectors we're actually used to dealing with. So that's a big improvement. And I mentioned before about lack of pre-selection on the cheapo devices. So in my area, I'm about 30 miles southwest of that big building that Scott Feibusch was showing us in his presentation before, in a highly RF saturated area. I have a big public safety tower and cell tower about a mile from me. It's used by the New Jersey State Police and other organizations. Overload can be a problem. And the chips have some AGC built in on two levels. And the Raphael Micro Tuner chip has automatic gain control. And the RTL platform itself also has AGC. I switch them both off. And the reason I switch them off is when I put them on, it'll take the noise floor up to about 30 dB. And there's just no point. So instead, what I found is a compromise. And the some of the recordings I'm going to be playing today, I did with the AGC off, the gain at about 20 dB, And all the signals we're recording were recorded using these little indoor antennas in here. And as you'll see, plenty of signal. If you get a taste for this and you want to really have some fun, there are better platforms, and there's the AirSpy. So the best way to describe the AirSpy is if you've looked at the SDR Play, the AirSpy is the RTL2832U equivalent of the SDR Play.
What kind of receiver did you use it on?
These are the receivers.
Okay, the
dongles are the the dongles are half the receivers, right? Because the other half is the computer. But the thing about the AirSpy that I like, and I looked at the SDR Play, and I almost bought one. And here's why I stopped. I like a piece of software called UniTrunker. UniTrunker will track trunk systems, and using some external digital decoding software will also decode things like DMR and P25 digital and so on. But UniTrunker and SDR Play don't play. So, you know, if I buy something to cover the VHF and UHF spectrum that's a little better, ultimately I think it's going to be the AirSpy. Okay, so Zadig. I was scratching my head about this one until Tina pointed out to me that Zadig has something to do with Voltaire. And I'll leave it to the philosophers in the room as to why a driver installation program for an SDR has anything to do with Voltaire. Other than you can become a little philosophical installing it, because I went through a sort of a dry run through in the hotel room before. And like the first five times I tried to install the drivers, it didn't quite work, which then made me very happy with my decision that for what I'm going to show you a little later in the presentation, I pre-recorded a lot of clips of different types of reception because I didn't know what conditions would be here. I didn't know what signals were going to actually be receivable in this room. So the reason I'm showing you this screen is because if you make the plunge into the RTL SDR world, you're going to get to know this screen. And the reason you're going to get to know this screen is because the native device, little hum there, the native device that was designed originally for PAL over-the-air TV reception uses the RTL2832 USB driver, which is not the driver that all this great software to receive everything else was written for. You instead have to override those drivers with the WIN USB drivers. And there's a lot of information on the internet, so I'm not going to go into it too much right now. Other than to say it's something you have to watch for. So when you go to install it, though, it may throw you again. It might be seen as a bulk interface device or as an RTL2832. Hang on for 1 minute while I grab a recall. But if you see either, you're good. Windows natively associates the DVB driver with the device ID, but we want the WIN USB drivers. So if you're upgrading Windows, if you've replaced some drivers, if something breaks, something to be aware of.
together a list of essential apps. Don't worry about copying any of this down. I will post all this after the fest. And if you just email me, and I'll post in the mailing list and the Facebook group exactly where to find it. So, SDR Sharp is the main SDR app used for this platform. We'll see a lot of it. I'll show you some examples of it. DSD Decoder will decode digital. Virtual Audio Cable, very, very important because it's the method for piping the output of one program into another. So for example, SDR Sharp, bear with me. So SDR Sharp may not understand the digital protocol, but you can pipe the output into a program that does. And we'll show some examples of that. Virtual Audio Cable is one of the few non-free pieces of software. I mentioned Unitrunker. Folks like other interfaces like HDSDR, Linrad. The great thing about an SDR platform, you know, just like SDR Play has the SDR Uno app, you can change the personality of whatever you're viewing to suit your preferences. This is an interesting one, DAB Player. If you want to listen to digital audio broadcasting, and this is one for you, Janice, if you're traveling, so you can listen to DAB when you're in Europe using this device, but it doesn't like the WinUSB drivers. You've got to go back to the other original RTL drivers. Folks are doing things like tracking aircraft, ADS-BNA cars. There are PAL and NTSC decoders. You could even decode your neighbor's temperature sensor. RDS decoding, DXing by RDS. It's certainly possible. I mean, pretty much any analog sound card mode you've heard of or tried or used or played with, you can decode on an SDR platform. It's just a question of taking the signal, piping it out of whatever your main receiver program into something that can decode it. But two things you're never going to receive, or at least unless if someone in this room can correct me on this, you really hit the jackpot. You're not going to watch American digital television, and you're not going to decode AM/HD radio because of patent issues. No software. I've looked and looked and looked. I've even seen some threads where there are bounties for folks to come up with a way to decode these things. Plugins. So I'm going to talk a lot about SDR Sharp today. And one of the strengths of SDR Sharp is it's an open architecture allowing for all kinds of plugins to make it extensible. And there's one guy in Russia, the guy is just so prolific. If you want to receive something, this guy's got a plugin for it. His whole page though is in Russian, so you have to use Google Translate to figure it out. But the guy has some good stuff. The biggest one is Frequency Manager Suite. And that's a suite of five programs that handle things like scanning and memories and
The Pluginator is good. The Pluginator is handy because if you've played around with this in the early days, you used to have to manually edit an XML file to add a plugin. The Pluginator, you don't have to do that anymore. It makes things much, much easier. I just came across a database plugin. It can import different frequency lists. So I was talking before about manual editing. If you look at that middle line there, it's typically called the magic line to make whatever plugin you're trying to work. You used to have to add something like that manually, but the Pluginator, as part of the frequency manager suite, now takes care of that. So this is the setup screen, and let's see here.
We're looking at a close-up of the RTL-SDR controller hardware setup screen for SDR Sharp. If we look at the device list, we see we're running the RA20T hardware, and we have two 2832U devices connected, labeled 0 and 1. We have two connected because we'll be doing a trunk tracking demo, and one of the limitations of each receiver is that it will process a little more than 2 megahertz of spectrum at a time. So if you're tracking a trunk system and you have a control channel and voice channel separated by more than 2 megahertz, it's very convenient to have two or more receivers to be able to track the various voice conversations. I want to call your attention to these two boxes for AGC, automatic gain control, that are both unchecked, one for RTL and one for the tuner. These are each separate chips within the package, and the reason they're unchecked is because I find I get better results leaving them unchecked as I live in a very RF-rich environment. If I check these boxes, one or the other or both, I find that my noise floor goes way up and I'm much more prone to overload. So instead, I set the RF gain manually, and you can use this slider to do so. I usually leave it right here at about 20 dB and find that gives me the best results. Finally, we have this box for frequency correction in parts per million. And you'll note that I keep mine at 0. I'm able to keep mine at 0 because of the devices I have with the thermally compensated crystal oscillators we mentioned earlier. When I used to have the older model, I used to keep this at about 19 parts per million in order to maintain accuracy.
Okay, so that was good. That gave me a minute to recuperate here. As I mentioned, I prepackaged a bunch of the reception demos because I didn't quite know what the conditions were going to be here. So we'll take you through several of them here. So let's take a look now at the FM broadcast.
This is SDR Sharp receiving a wideband FM broadcast signal. You'll note here we have the bandwidth set to 200,000 cycles or 200 kilohertz, which is the width of an FM broadcast channel. And if you look up here, we have the spectrum display. Down here is the waterfall display. And over on the right, we have some different controls, like the zoom control, where we can zoom in on a signal like that. And we have a contrast control, where you can change the hue of the signal elements on the waterfall. But let's take a look at this signal for a moment. It's pretty interesting. We're receiving the RDS data up top, and we have the main frequency modulated signal here. Let me zoom in just a little bit. But what are these two square forms on the sidebands? Well, those are the in-band on-channel Ubiquiti digital sidebands for this station, and it shows you how much spectrum these iBox sidebands actually take up. Many have questioned the value of having an in-band on-channel digital system as opposed to allocation of a separate digital band, such has been done with DAB in Europe. But that's what it looks like. So you can easily see how the digital sidebands increase congestion.
And that is the next to last editorial comment about IBOC that I'll make. I'll say one other thing that'll be relevant to the broadcast band DXers in this next segment, where we'll hear some audio clips.
SDR Sharp is currently tuned to 101.1 megahertz, which is WCBS FM in New York City. Let's give a quick listen. And 400 kilohertz up is Trenton, New Jersey, 101.5. Let's click there and give a listen.
Dive, we don't take care of them. Many of the goats have been rescued from slaughterhouses, and the healthy ones cavort outside of a barn.
But let's take a look at the adjacent frequency to both of those, 101.3. Well,
I'm going to pause that for a minute, just so everybody takes a good look at that. Right, the IBOC sidebands are killing any opportunity you ever had of doing some adjacent channel DXing, which used to be a big thing. So, if you've wondered in recent years why you can't receive anything, a picture's worth a thousand. Sure.
Yeah, Dan, if you're if you're hi-fi buff, are they also not robbing a little bit of bandwidth away from the original potential of the station, right?
Arguably, we have to look at it a little bit. In that the 200K channel, I think originally it was meant to be plus or minus 75 of deviation and then a guard band on each side. Right. And looking out, the IBOC sidebands are actually going out into the adjacent channel, but it's what you're saying is certainly possible.
Here we have a whole lot of signal that we can't do much with because it is the IBOC sideband of both WCBS and New Jersey 101.5 just mashed up against each other, removing any opportunity to do some adjacent channel DXing on the FM band. So clearly one of the disadvantages, at least to DXers, of the IBOC digital system.
Okay, so seeing is believing. And just to take a quick break, I couldn't resist the temptation for some cavorting goats. So while everyone may think cats own the internet, I think goats are about to stage a coup.
You could get an HD radio receiver and receive those IBOC bands.
You could.
And it's pretty good sounding audio, too. But that's not DXing. That's something else.
It's totally different.
I did see some RDS sitting on some of the carriers in the last picture, too. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. I don't know the answer to that, but it sounds feasible.
I mean, it makes sense on every other aspect of it.
Yeah. I guess it would depend in part about the actual demodulation method used for IBOC. Is it really being received as FM and then being converted into whatever it is? But with the patents, we don't know. So let's now take a look at something that might be closer to what a typical scanner user might want to do with the RTL.
Most of my listening time with the RTL SDR dongle is spent using SDR Sharp or Unitrunker. So let's have a look now in depth at SDR Sharp. And for this example, we'll use a NOAA weather radio station on 162.55 megahertz on the VHF band. As you can see, the radio is tuned there. This area of the display is called the spectrum display. This is the waterfall. This is the IF display. And this is the audio display. We're set to narrow FM mode, and our bandwidth is 12,500 hertz, 12.5 kilohertz. We have a relative squelch level set at 75. That's a relative number. So as with setting the squelch for any radio, find the number that works for you. Let's give a listen.
5 feet, building to 4 to 7 feet. Chance of showers in the morning, gun showers likely in the afternoon. Chance of 60s. Southwest wind 5 to 10 miles an hour. Thursday night, mostly cloudy. Half an hour. Wednesday, mostly cloudy in the morning, then becoming partly sunny. Not as cool.
So we have a few NOAA weather radio stations, just 50 kilohertz apart each, and the one we're tuned to right now is the one in Midtown Manhattan, which comes in strongest at my location. Let's look at the audio tab, and I have filter audio checked. The filter that we're using is the Blackman-Harris 4 filter, which is on this drop-down list. I use Blackman-Harris 4 because it's the default and it works just fine. Let's listen switching in and out the audio filter.
As of 3 p.m. in Central Park, it was cloudy. The temperature was 24 degrees, the dew point 30, and the relative humidity 57%. The wind was variable at sea. This afternoon, partly sunny. Wind steady temperature in the upper 40s. Southeast winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Not as cool, lows in the upper 30s. South winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Wednesday, mostly cloudy in the morning. Then becoming partly sunny.
So there's an example of a couple of stations switching in and out the audio filter. I find that the AGC does make a difference. Here, we'll check that out.
5 miles an hour.
I'm going to make one comment about the AGC here. It's not exactly going to be an accurate representation because I had to do some post-processing to equalize the narration and the received audio. So there's a little compression and limiting at play here, but it's subtle. You can hear it.
So this is off. That's on. And you'll note you can play with the AGC threshold as well as the decay and the slope. Great thing about playing in software is you're not going to break anything. The FFT display tab is where you can do things like speed up or slow down the display in case you have a reason to either have a closer look at something or have more data scroll by. I usually just leave that at the default. The next five items are part of the Frequency Manager suite, and they are the Frequency Manager and Scanner, so in the Manager you can set up memories, assign them to groups, classify them by protocol and by service, and then in the Scanner portion you can select a group to scan or a frequency range to scan. There's a frequency entry panel if you'd like to manually enter a frequency, although usually what I do is I use the arrow keys and manually will change frequency to whatever I want. Or if I'm in a busy chunk of spectrum and there's an interesting signal, I could just click on it like that. You'll notice here that even though I was clicking on 162.450, I wasn't quite on it, and I'm coming up with some interesting frequencies. That's controlled by the snap to grid feature. You could either turn that off, and then it'll go exactly where you click, and I mean exactly carried out to hertz, or you can set a step size of something that will be a little more practical depending on what you're listening to, and set that to 5 kilohertz, for example. And we'll click here, and then you see we end up on even multiples of 5 kilohertz. And we're on 162.45 now. If you like, you can use the software to collect some interesting metrics like busiest frequencies or longest transmissions or what frequencies are busy at what time. You can collect activity of the frequencies you're scanning, put it into a log, and then take that log and dump it all into a spreadsheet for some more analysis. There's a scheduler, and you can add a time and frequency to begin recording based on your memories. However, while there is a local time field, that's the start time, and there doesn't appear to be any way to specify a stop time, so you'll just have to stop things manually.
Okay. This went on for another half hour, and I kept, there's just so much you can do with all these plugins, and so at some point I just had to edit it down to the essentials. Yes?
So these are plugins to SDR Sharp?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
It's the plugins started with the 5 frequency manager suite items.
Okay.
So, that's Elsa. She was with us for only a year, unfortunately, but she liked radio. She used to like to come into the shack and see what I was listening to. So this screen is the main start screen for Unitrunker. If you've ever listened to a trunked scanner, this is not going to give you the same experience by any means, but it'll let you listen to trunked radio as well as provide you with an incredible amount of data that your scanner won't provide.
As you can see here, we have 2 RTL2832U receivers. The first one is going to be used in the role of a signal receiver. A signal receiver is used to track the control channel. And you see here, we specified the role as signal. We could have specified it as voice or as unspecified. Unspecified has a special use for tracking digital systems. Let's start this up. We have a park frequency in here of 860.7125, which is where the control channel was the last time we listened to this system. And it looks like it's still there because it's updating site information over here. Notice we get a frequency plan and the source and target of each communication.
It's worth mentioning, none of that actually has to be stored. If you have a control channel and you don't have the plan information about the system, put it there. It's going to fish that out for you over the air.
We have audio output set to unspecified at the moment. Let's turn that on, though, just so you can see this really is a control channel. A control channel knows that's exactly what it sounds like. And let's take a look here on the scope. And we have a nice, clean control channel signal. If we look down a little further on this screen, we'll see a health check of 100. That's always good when it's at 100, at least most of the time. That means all the data is being properly decoded. And it recognizes that we're listening to a Motorola system. We have a number of system types checked off here, but as long as the one we want is included in the checks, it's fine to have the other.
You don't have to worry about being efficient. Just leave everything checked.
Let's start up the voice receiver. Let's pause this here for a minute just so I could freeze the screen. So we're looking at the VCO tab for the voice receiver right now. See, we're set to voice, where on the other receiver it was set to signal. So each receiver has a completely independent role. We've checked off the emphasis because we're going to be listening to these signals, and we do want the FM de-emphasis. And our audio output is going to the Microsoft Sound Mapper, so get to the speakers. So the frequency that we were listening to a moment ago is 857.2125. And let's start this again, because it looks like the source and target talk group info have gone away. Okay, so that's what I wanted to show you in each transmission, so you know what you're listening to, the frequency monitor, and the source and target talk groups will come up. Now, it's possible to label the source and target talk groups. As you see here, we have a field for source label, and we have a field for target label. You can either manually label these yourselves to the site plan, but it's going to be a little laborious, or if you have a subscription to Radio Reference, you can simply download that information, and it will make it much more useful. One of the problems I've seen with UniTrunker that I haven't solved yet, though, is there are times where I may just want to monitor a handful of talk groups. Well, it doesn't seem as if there's a straightforward way to do that. Rather than say which talk groups you want to monitor, you can specify in a list which talk groups you would like to exclude. So let's listen in again for another moment.
Trunker and an analog trunk system.
I have a question.
Sure.
SDR Sharp, you can use that with SDR Play. Will all these other plugins work with them, or only those dongles?
So I don't believe that the current version of SDR Sharp works anymore with SDR Play, because there was something about a DLL. And
now there's SDR Uno. And,
right.
You know, there's a bunch of other.
Right. The official word from the SDR Sharp folks is that SDR Play is not a currently supported platform.
Okay.
It had been in the past through use of some intermediate DLL. So here we are. Looks like we're back in the same place, but instead we're going to do a example of decoding a P25 digital system, which has a couple of extra aspects to it.
Let's monitor a P25 digital system. We're using UniTrunker again, and we have our two receivers. This is the signal receiver, or the control channel receiver, and this is the voice receiver. They're both running. Let's take a look at the signal receiver, and yes, there is signal. So we're currently monitoring the control channel on this frequency, and as you can see, it's a 700 megahertz system. It's not terribly busy. It's used by public agencies as well as the New Jersey State Police, but the New Jersey State Police still uses the 800 megahertz analog system as the primary system for dispatch. But there are talk groups patched over here. Our role is set to signal, that's good, and the status is decoding. We don't need any audio output or digital output because we're monitoring a control channel. We're not going to look to the audio. We're set to P25, which is good. And the health is 100. So let's pop on the audio receiver. Over on the audio receiver, we're set to voice. Our digital output, which is important here, is set to the virtual audio cable. The reason we're using the virtual audio cable is we will take the output of this receiver and send the digital data to another program called DSD Plus, and DSD Plus is the program that will actually decode it and make it audible to the human ear. And again, we're set to both analog and P25 here. It doesn't matter if you have more checked off than needed. It just makes it easier so you don't have to go constantly check and uncheck things. One other thing, if we come back up here, you'll see that the control receiver knows we're monitoring an APCO P25 system. So we have signal on the control channel. We're not receiving any audio yet. It's flatlined there. Let's minimize this for a moment so I can get to the icon for DSD Plus. And I will place this down here. And the first thing we have to find out is what input device does DSD Plus need to use for the virtual audio cable. So one of the things that is a sort of old school limitation of DSD Plus is that it uses numbered interfaces. So we have to run DSD Plus once without any parameters, and it will tell us the number of the interface we wanted. You see here, we need input device number 2, line 1 virtual audio cable. Output device number 1 is currently set to the speakers, and that's fine. It'll be used by default. So let's back out of here. And if you notice, while we were doing this, there was some audio signal over there on the voice receiver, but we didn't hear anything because we didn't have DSD Plus up and running. So let's start DSD Plus. It's going to open a few windows for us. We'll arrange them on the screen the way we like, and then we'll wait a moment to see what we can hear.
Let me go now to the audio segment. As I said, not a very busy system, so it actually took a while to get you these clips. Something to mention, though, before I play the clips, there's a lot of activity moving to phase 2 encrypted systems,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm. Especially in Essex County.
This is not going to help you listen to a phase 2 encrypted system. But if you want to play detective and try and figure out what's on the system, you can, and I have successfully decoded the data stream. So you could see what radios are on the system, what talk groups are on the system. I don't know. Is that useful? If you think it's fun, it's fun. But you're not going to be able to listen
to a conversation. So, but let's listen to some unencrypted P25 phase one.
We're making our way to the project to see if I can get a unit available. 347 Liberty Avenue, procedures.
Great, Steve.
Last two.
There were long gaps in here.
Yeah, this one. This is fine. Six applications special.
Six.
Yeah, do you have an EMS response at 215-457?
That's about the clearest.
That's perfect. The call is signed and reroute.
Okay, thank you, thank you.
Okay. Question. So there, yes.
That audio sounded, in my opinion, fairly dreadful.
They're constant.
And by the way, this is the one clip, because it was separate, I did not do any post-processing on it.
Question, is that native to format that they're using, or is that just initially received when you code?
No, that's pretty much the way it sounds when I listen on my unit and scanner.
Yeah, that's the format that they are constantly
It's pretty bad, and you know, if you talk to folks who work in public safety or public service who carry digital radios, a lot of them would privately tell you they'd rather have their analog radios back. And if you remember, New Jersey State Police, that was the analog trunking example I showed you. They're there, they're on 800 megahertz, they're analog, they're happy, they're not planning to switch. They do some patches over this system for DOT and some other things, but they're not looking to jump anytime soon. I guess until Motorola starts twisting their arm and not wanting to maintain what they have. You know, that's a chronic problem where Motorola will go into agencies and say, well, sorry, we're not going to support what you have anymore.
They've actually gotten better over the last year. From what I've heard, when I've updated my receiver, when I've updated the Bearcat, because Bearcat's actually issued some fixes, and I guess they're filter fixes or whatever, but they make the transmitters easier to understand.
I mean, I don't know, anybody with like one of the newer Whistler scanners, does it sound much better than this?
No, not really.
I mean, I have a 10-year-old unit in 996T, and it pretty much sounds like this, so.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, fabulous. Fabulous. So, some resources, the big list. It just goes on and on and on. So if you're planning on getting an RTL SDR stick and you want to know what kind of software is out there, that URL is a great place. And then there's the Russian plug-in page. Again, don't worry about the URLs. I'm going to post this. I just haven't figured out exactly where yet. If you want to be sure to get a copy, and I'm toying with the idea, just a bandwidth issue, of making the entire presentation, including the video clips, available for download. It's going to be, I think it's something like 300 meg or something like that, but
I
think... So anyway, if you have any questions, you know, feel free to ask me over the course of the weekend, and I'll stay now as long as we can for any questions. And there's my email, Jeff.
You didn't mention sideband at all, or if you did, I slept through that.
Yep. So I did not mention it except in passing, but let me bring up a live RTL SDR screen just to show you.
Yeah,
So you see the standard modes are right up there.
Yeah.
And we support lower and upper sidebands.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, I must have missed that.
Right, upper only because it's above 25 megahertz, right? You can use the RTL SDR with the Mac. Linrad works with the Mac. Linrad is a lot more complex than this. Not being a Mac person, I don't know about other options, but if you search for RTL SDR Mac, if they're out there, you will find them. But at least Linrad, which was originally developed for Linux, is well supported. I just understand it's a bit of a lift to get it working. I think Alan had a question. Any other questions?
Trunker and phase two non-encrypted. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Unitrunker, it's very capable. The only thing I really don't like about Unitrunker is, you know, there may be a handful of talk groups on a system that I'd like to listen to, and I'd like to be able to just put in a list of those talk groups. I have not found a way to do it. The only way I've found is by exclusion. It makes utterly no sense.
Not at all. Can you hang on to one topic? Maybe could you say, like, I was just exclude all the others.
But you have to come up with an exclusion list, right? You can't just say, you know, let's say, if not 1, 2, 3, don't listen. It just, I don't know why. I don't know if it's an architectural issue with the way the software was written, but you would think it would be pretty simple. Maybe at some point that'll be addressed. Unitrunker is very interesting, by the way. It's not just used with RTL SDR. It's used by a lot of scanner owners who feed it with a discriminator tag as well to capture the data. So in that case, you could, on the scanner, control the talk groups that you're going to listen to, and then gather data separately. But I don't think it'll do phase two if your scanner doesn't support phase two. I'm not sure what it'll do with that control channel, if that control channel is any different. Any other questions? Yes.
One more on the audio setting. Do you recommend the Blackman Harris 4?
That's the default for Narrow FM, and the 4, I think, I've just inferred this, refers to the fact that it has a sharp drop-off at 4K. So if you're listening to typical scanner content, you know, that's what you use. Okay, well, thank you for joining me. Thank you for bearing with me. It's always at the most inopportune of moments. And again, more tomorrow from the scanner folks. And then Mark Phillips is going to be doing something on SDR. And then Mark Fahey talking about, I think, a little bit of SDR in the future.